Real nice day out here, Cletus.
Yes, sir, tis.
You know, times like this, I'm glad we're out here in the middle of nowhere where them Wokans can't make us wear one of them silly old bandanas.
Yes, sir, I hear that.
Damn fools look like they're going a train robbing. You going train robbing, Cletus?
No, sir, I am not.
Whole damn Coronas is a hoax anyway.
Yeah, they're saying something about how Trump's doctor said it was the devil come.
Gentile Jesus, that's something. All these people out here fornicating with old Scratch, you say?
Something about it, I did. Didn't quite follow it. Bunch of mess.
Well, speaking of taking ill, is you all right, Cleet? You're all sweaty. Keep coughing, I notice.
Well, I ain't got no devils in trouble, and I ain't been drinking no damn Mexican beer.
I know it.
I only drink my homemade brew, Cletus Maynard's Mississippi Moonshine. It ain't nothing serious. Probably just my damn liver.
Well, I know what'll make you feel better. Them boys at DC On Screen done recorded a new episode. You know they talking about Stargirl Season 1. You always did like them. Now, hold on, Cletus. That sounds serious. Now, lucky for you, I know mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. We need you up and healthy. Get that vote in for Trump. Let me just make sure I turn this here DC On Screen on. He'll be sure to lift your spirits right after these messages.
Welcome into DC On Screen episode 609. This is the podcast where we talk about the DC Comics multiverse on film and television, give honest opinions on the projects upcoming and past. I always screw that up. And believe that every version... We believe that every version of a property is valid, even if we don't want it to be. If it has been released, it is fair game. So beware of spoilers, and welcome to the show. I'm David C. Robertson, and this, my trusty cohort, Jason Goss.
Oh, good. I was bracing for whatever you were going to do to me.
Oh, no, no. It's been a busy week, and... I literally just copied and pasted this.
My co-host, the man who abruptly steps away to clean a toilet.
This was copied and pasted like 2 seconds before you called me.
That's fair.
So it still says this, a feisty cherub of a man, Jason Goss. So I couldn't use that as I used that a minute ago. But hey, man.
Hey. One day I'm going to get like a dignified one where you're going to be like, my co-host, the man who once beat Solomon Grundy into submission. I'm never going to get that, Emma.
I mean, if I follow it up with, you know, in a hand job kind of way, you know, like, no, you're not. No.
Oh, well,
sometimes I say nice things.
It's a trifling matter. I'll be all right.
Sometimes I say nice things. It's never really, really mean things, though.
No, not particularly.
It's always just like, you know, comedic, weird, out of the ordinary things.
Now, what I love is when we're doing a news episode and it's something regarding like a current thing that aired and I haven't gotten to watch it yet. So I have no fucking idea what you're talking about sometimes.
Yeah, those are fun for me.
Absolutely clueless.
Well, before we get into this review of Stargirl Season 1, I do want to thank the patrons. And when we have a new news episode, which will be next week, because Fandome is Saturday. Yeah. And we've got a Discord that's set up now. People are already joining the Discord. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't actually give you like a for real link that you can just like say. It's just all like random letters and shit. So if you want to email us at dconscreen@gmail.com, or you want to go over to our Twitter, DC On Screen, or our Facebook group, or it's posted places, and I'm going to put it up. I'm going to put a link to it on the DC On Screen website, dconscreen.com. Hopefully by the time this is released, I'll have gotten to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to thank the patrons. You guys are awesome, and when we have that news episode, I'll give you guys a proper shout-out, the latest couple of patrons who have joined the ranks. I don't do it here because, quite frankly, you guys deserve more, and our review episodes get, 200 or 300 less listeners.
If you don't watch the show, you don't really Well, listen to the review generally.
Yeah, yeah, we get lower listens on these. So
if we had anything we would call like the main feed of our show, it'd be the news episodes. So that's where it goes.
Yeah. So thank you though to the patrons. $1 gets you the weekly show ad free. $5 gets you that plus Marvel reviews, How Now, Jason's pull list, warm ups, Chasing Squirrels, and I'm working on something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a little something. I have an intro and an outro, brand new intro and outro for a compilation of every old Widder Woman segment we've had on this show. And I want to stress, I am not the old Widder Woman.
Mm-mm.
Jason is not the old Widder Woman.
I can't get my voice that high.
I can, but it's still not me. I had to go through back channels. I had to find my way to the old Widder Woman and request an intro. And she not only gave me an intro, she gave me an outro.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited because I don't know why I meticulously kept those Widder Woman voicemails so intact. Like, I knew exactly like which ones were which and where.
I don't know either. And I promise you some people are straight up mad you did.
I know. And Widder Woman is such a peach, man. She actually provided transcriptions.
Yeah, that was pretty solid.
So we actually have like transcripts and translations for what the old Widder Woman is saying.
Nice.
And it's really nice. So I don't know, man. That's gonna be for the patrons. I feel like Eli Hernandez just went, screw this, I'm done with these guys.
Yeah, we're gonna lose five people off the top.
Please don't go away. We're putting it on Patreon. Come on. Anyway, if you don't want to, or if you can't help in the Patreon department, which is the best way to help, it helps us the most, please consider throwing us a positive iTunes or Apple podcast review, whatever it is called these days. I don't know. I'm old. Just embrace it, Dave. Embrace it. Embrace the age. Anyway, let's get into the Stargirl review. I mince no words up front. I love this show.
That was great. It was a great season.
It was a fantastic season. It was a short season. It was incredibly focused.
Mm-hmm.
Every actor did a fantastic job. The only character I didn't like was Mike Dugan. And he was just kind of a little skeez ball of a kid. But even by the end, I was like, all right.
Yeah. He definitely earned his way.
The people that I didn't like otherwise were people I feel like I was supposed to not like the villains.
Yeah.
Man, I dug it, though.
Icicle's
parents, yeah. I dug it, though, because I really liked how they handled the Young Justice Society coming into their own and coming together. And I really liked that they weren't really the Young Justice Society. They were Infinity Inc. If you know the comics, they were Infinity Inc. But I liked that. I was like, oh, that's neat. They got Yolanda. Oh, okay. They got Beth. Okay, cool. And I thought that it was brilliant the way they kind of like threw us under the bus a little bit with that trick there. Because they're like, they totally built up. Like, if you know the books, you know Henry King is Brainwave Jr. We know that he's part of Infinity Inc. He's a good guy. And then for them to kill him dead was such a blow. And just for a second, when Brainwave was pretending to be him, I was just like, oh, crap. This show just, wait. Oh, Yolanda just, oh, God. She just killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was Brainwave. Oh. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I really liked that. I really liked the entire journey for Courtney. I liked that Starman was not her father. If they undo that, now that we see Joel McHale back at the or that he's still alive, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that her dad was just kind of a piece of shit, and it gave me so much joy to see Luke Wilson punch him.
Yeah, that didn't hurt my feelings one bit.
I don't know. I feel like I'm just kind of rattling. What you got, man?
I mean, from the I mean, well, going from the start, which seems appropriate in a way, like the mm-hmm. show came out swinging.
It did.
I mean, that first scene is just a. It's a. I don't remember how many names were dropped in the first scene, but it was just everywhere I turned, there was somebody like a new kind of big name, especially for early JSA kind of days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a very inclusive scene. I guess I'll put it. They must have crammed like what 15 or 20 different high-end properties just in there.
Oh yeah,
if not more.
Well, it's the Justice Society. I wouldn't call any of them high end necessarily.
But. Recognizable properties. I'll call.
Look, dude, I'm not, and that's not a dig at the Justice Society. I'm just saying they're not the Justice League. The Silver Age is what really took off as far as
wasn't
a lot of those lower end characters.
Not the most popular at the moment, but definitely for their time, super popular. But yeah, they brought in a lot of stuff, a lot of heavy hitters, at least for the time period they were dealing with early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then dismantled it very quickly.
Which I was okay with.
I kind of was. Well, it got you to a spot very quickly. Like, you know what's going on. You know how powerful the, ISA is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're dealing with. And, you knew who won when it came down to it. So I just like that we got to start off with something that that grand. And then, like you said, the team building coming up after that, like episode to episode, seeing the team have to be built piece by piece, the trust in the team or between the team members getting built piece by piece as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice slow build.
And I like that they keep the like old timey aesthetic just because of who Pat Dugan is, not because it's actually set in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was neat. Like, well, that, I really kind of, appreciated that.
It's clearly, the show's happening in 2019, 20. Well, I guess 2019, maybe. Anyway, but the show's current, but they also moved to this tiny little town in Nebraska that is just, I mean, we have towns like that in Alabama where you could have dropped me off there. And unless I saw a car that was, if I saw a Tesla coming through, I would be astounded.
Yeah.
The logo on City Hall will still have like a horse and carriage painted on somewhere. We legit have stuff like that where you can tell like the town library was, maybe crowdsourced. I'm looking at you, Springle. I just know that personally that you can, there's places like that where it seems like they're stuck in time, for better or worse. And it does create a certain aesthetic though. It really does. Where like when he's sitting around fixing classic cars, honestly, if they'd put it in a normal situation, it would have been a little bit of a like, okay, come on. How do you set up a classic car service in just a random town and you're going to get away with, like, that's a niche. Some part of me was like, no, in this town, I bet they have classic cars. I bet there's a high percent of the population that has classic cars.
Yeah.
He's probably got decent business.
You moved to that town because it looks like a town out of the 50s.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely had a feel to it that, I don't know, it fit in really well. Even we were... And the wife and I, as I mentioned several times, this is one of the shows that, short of the finales, which we couldn't coordinate together, so I watched them alone. We watched it together, and there were a couple times where we paused it to look at their kitchen equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would just pause it and was like, dude, that, look at that set design. That is Robin's egg blue back there.
Yeah.
And then they'd have the, I forget what the name is, that's the green equivalent of that. Like, it's not quite seafoam. It's not avocado or anything like that. Like, that was a little bit later. The 70s were avocado, like where you could find green toilets and shit like that.
Yeah.
But you know the color I'm talking about. It's like the green version of that. But yeah, like they had all of that in the kitchen. I think it is seafoam,
but
maybe. But yeah, it was all in that kitchen. It all looked fantastically retro. Kind of dug it. I had to admit, like I liked that old style, like that old Rocket Man kind of style, the Rocketeer kind of style.
Yeah. If you take out the racism, I love that era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a requisite. Yeah. But as it was, yeah. If I could just remove all the people.
I feel like I need to make, like, because I'd love to live in that era, except for the lynching. Don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love that aesthetic.
I don't want any signs that say whites only to still remain.
Right.
That'll have to go. Right. Oh, speaking of, can I get right to one of my favorite moments? Because why the hell not?
Absolutely. Yeah, your show is well as mine. I don't care.
With permission, I'll go ahead and mention it.
you can talk about grilled cheese for all I care.
Yeah, dude. I laughed a little bit when they finally get to the manifesto.
Uh huh.
I enjoyed this bit. They get to the manifesto.
That was fantastic.
And they're like,
are you sure we're the good
environmental
guys?
Environmental protections, universal health care, eliminate racism. Like, we should. I enjoyed that. You have to get to the footnotes, the fine print, where they're like, well, I don't, about a quarter of the people that we try to do won't make it, but this is great.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
There it is. Okay. And then even, honestly, it flavored a little bit the rest of that. I'm just going to refer to that as an episode because I can't remember which happened in part one, part two, and it kind of doesn't matter. For the rest of that episode, it every time they mentioned, like, all these people are going to die, and some part of me was like, well, but...
Yeah.
There's a pragmatist in me that's like, Icicle's making some points.
Yeah.
I mean.
I liked how they weren't really, it didn't seem like they were trying to make any kind of case for like, you can't do this to humanity. You can't, you know, force people to think the way you want them to
think.
No,
no.
People have to be free. Like, they never tried to make that case. It was just like.
The At World's End speech.
Too many people are going to die.
You remember the At World's End speech?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically like, well, we're literally just here to make your planet better and more peaceful. Well, fuck yeah. Like, that's it. I mean, that's the gist of it.
Yeah.
You know, we're humans. We'll fucking fight when we want to. All that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a really good turn for a lot of reasons. And my favorite of among them was that there was absolutely no reason to think it existed until the moment they brought it up. I don't remember a drop of foreshadowing that they weren't absolutely evil. Like, everything in the show pointed toward, yes, they want all this power, and they want it solely for the sake of power. Like, at no point did they mention, oh, yeah, by the way, we're actually going to try to improve things.
Well, I mean, we kind of have had vague mentions of it where they're like, oh, man, we're going to do, like, the world is going to be a better place. Oh, it's going to be... So wonderful after we take over everything. It's like it'd be my vision for the world.
They do, but you know, in the normal parlance, when a bad guy's talking about that, you know damn well they're just talking about like an authoritarian kind of. They're not trying to actually make it better. They're just going to make it better under their rule. That's it.
Well, but yeah, but you know, I feel like Icicle was one of those guys. Like, he genuinely felt like, no, I'm the good guy here. Like, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. There's that 25% of the population that's going to die. Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, when he's given his speech, when he's ready to throw her over the top of the tower there. Like I said, it was the rest of the episode. I kind of thought, you know, I know the 25 million's bad, but...
I kind of agree with him.
But can we talk about this? Yeah.
Like, which 25 million?
Like, yeah, a little bit. Only the most willful of them, apparently.
Yeah.
But no. That was the other thing. Was like, part of me wanted to be like, okay, if this was me in the show, I'm Stargirl. I hear that this is the manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me would want to be like, there's a part of me that would just want to be like, okay, hold on now. Hold on. I just thought they were actually evil. They're just deeply misguided. Like, I would almost want to go find Icicle immediately and be like, we just need to talk. You have great plans. We just need to get some people involved. You can't kill 25 million people to do it. I'm sorry.
I'm pretty sure some of them are just really evil. You know, like the guy with the fat southern guy. God, I can't remember his name. Yeah.
Yeah, the gambler.
I'm pretty sure he's just like, that all sounds good to me. People going to die, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It just sounded like they gave him enough money where he's like, yeah, okay, sure. We'll do the rest of that too. How much money do I get? Okay. Well, and then, you know, Ocean Master is it Tigers?
Yeah, I think so.
I was blanking on that for a second.
God.
I feel like I should look up which version she actually was. I may just go ahead and write down that time, and I'll just say that again. We should probably have known that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
We're going to call that a cut.
Yeah, she was Tigress.
Tigress, okay. In the case of, like, Ocean Master and Tigress,
Ocean Master or Sports Master?
Sports Master and Tigress. Orm is busy elsewhere. Yeah, so in the case of Sportsmaster and Tigers, yeah, the absolute sadists. They were jackals the entire time, you know?
I loved them.
They were compelling to watch.
Yeah.
But, and hey, who doesn't like seeing that little trick where you toss the bat behind your back? You know, that's always cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, sadists. Yeah, they're actually evil. They're just genuinely bad people.
Am I crazy, or did they have a daughter named Artemis?
Pretty
show.
Sure. Yeah. I don't remember how much I saw her, but I remember the name being dropped.
Yeah, that I was pretty sure that that name got dropped, and I was excited.
I mean, I know their parents. That's why they kill the fiddler lady, Bowen. I can't remember her first name.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
and I just loved how quick that went down, because she was at like, oh, I'm going to take you pieces of shit down. You did this, and this. Bam.
I'm going to take dead. You down a neck, down a peg. You, how dare you, you sadist, but dead.
That was so. That was wholly satisfying to me.
It was, in a way. Like, well, also, it seemed very true. Like, why would you walk up to two absolutely cold-blooded killers who enjoy the act of doing so, by the way, and literally with no backup, without even your weapon drawn, you're going to sit there and call them bad parents and expect to walk away? Fuck, are you kidding me? You're dead. You're dead all day.
I feel like they just kind of showed up and...
Yeah.
The rest of the society was like, what happened to the fiddler? She called us bad parents. We had to take her out. Okay. That would have been my call. You know that, right? Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
At some point, if you're Jordan, at some point you're like, you know what? Fool me once. I should have known. I should have known not to send her in there with you two. I should have known you would have killed her because you're goddamn hyenas and can't be trusted. So this is on me, really, when it comes down to it.
Yeah. It's like, well, run a whole group of supervillains. What do you want? They're bound to turn on each other at some point. Yeah.
Well, to that end, this cracked me up a little bit in the finale watching, like, how many, like, they might have been able to finish this plan up had they not killed each other. But they were down in ranks.
They were.
They were down a magician.
I really, dude, I really love that concept, though, that all these supervillains just kind of took over a town. And now they're like school administrators and soccer moms. And they're all just kind of
gym
piss. They're all just kind of
gym down the street.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're all just kind of pissed off when you deign to insult their child. I dig it. Yeah. I like it. I've seen suburban parents. They're awful.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the kind of thing, like, if you're that kind of person anyway, you, out of that context, you might also kill somebody for insulting you or your parenting skills or anything in between. But definitely in that environment. Oh, she was dead, man. She was gone. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've seen they might parents have run out on
the new JSA had they not killed each other before. I mean, I don't know what Gambler was going to do about it. Run away.
He was going to sit around eating fried Twinkies and accruing wealth. That's what he was going to do.
Yeah, probably. I could see him. There's a line I heard somewhere in D&D is for Nerds that always cracked me up. But this guy who's kind of like him, just very, it's a D&D role-playing game, obviously. So it's this character who's just shady as hell. Like, he's got to deal with every faction in town. He owes twice what he'd ever earned in a lifetime to everybody. You know, it's just one of those guys. But he just always just manages to squeak out of it. And, you know, frankly, most of the time it's just he gets really good dice rolls and manages, like the whole time the Dungeon Master's just like, how are you fucking doing this? He's like, I don't know. Rolled a 20. What do you want? I seduced the entire crowd at once. What do you want from me? Anyway, so there's like an end scene where everything works out finally. He manages to get himself out of trouble and he manages to zero his debt. No one's trying to kill him for once.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a crowd gathers and the character playing him is just like, well, so what do you want to do? And he's like, crowd's getting a bit antsy. I think I'm going to shuffle off. I was like, that's the gambler right there. That there's a moment where the gambler's like, crowd's getting a bit antsy. I think I'm going to head out of here. But he does it in the Kentucky Fried Chicken accent.
That guy made my skin crawl every time I saw him.
He should. Yeah. He should. Like, that dude has child porn on his computer.
Oh.
You don't get to that. You don't get that vibe. You don't get that vibe off him.
I got the vibe. I just didn't want to say it out loud.
He's definitely got it. I think so.
I'm glad they went ahead and let Barbara in on the situation.
Yeah, that would have been... I mean, we watch so many shows like this that at some point I just run out of patience for the keeping people out of the loop storyline, even though I know has to be there to some extent. But I'm there are moments where I'm just out of runway for that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I get it. But I thought they did it pretty swiftly, all things considered. And she turned it around pretty quick. What was that? Within like the course of two episodes, she was on board?
Yeah.
That's not
speaking too bad. Speaking of Swift, Dick Swift, man, Richard Swift, that like they get, Shade.
Stinger that number
reveal,
one.
That reveal that he was in that painting the whole time.
Oh, I've seen him in the painting.
I had not.
I've definitely seen him. Well, I don't know. All right. Just looking back, I can't recall if I actually saw him in the painting as it sits behind their giant evil table.
Uh-huh.
The evil conference room number one or whatever the fuck they're calling it. I don't remember specifically if he's in the painting right there where you can see him.
Uh-huh.
I do know that in several of the pictures I saw posted several places, he is very clearly there. Like, no doubt about it. There's an actor there.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten that he was even in the JSA. Like, if we did see him in that opening episode, and maybe we did in that, you know, in that opening fight.
There might be like a plume of shadow somewhere that we didn't catch. Like I said,
yeah,
a bunch of names got dropped at the time. But.
Yeah. I was just, you know, trying to take it all in.
Yeah. I could have watched it a few times.
But I feel like they purposefully did not. I feel like they didn't mention him on purpose. Like, again, like throughout the entire show to drop that twist on me. They're like, he's still around.
Yeah.
And I was excited for it. It was like, shit. Ah.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I was just a little bit confounded by toward the end of this is I don't actually recall, especially in season one, I don't know if I recall a team of do-gooders ever winning so thoroughly at the end. I mean, they won the fuck out of this.
Well, sort of.
Like, everybody else is dead. They destroy the machine. I mean, enough that, like, they had... Well, especially... Oh, all right, the part that really got me where where I was like, what are they going to do for the rest of this episode? And then they found something to do. It was like 15, maybe 20 minutes into the very last episode, and Yolanda just shanks Brainwave. And I was like, well, you don't even have to, I don't know, like, that's it. That's game over. That's checkmate. We're done here.
Mm.
Like, yeah, they need to go break the hold, I guess, but kind of like a bit of an afterthought. Like, without Brainwave, it's over.
I like that Mike got the death knell for Icicle.
I wouldn't have minded seeing him again. He's a good villain and a good actor. But
I'm good with him gone.
But I was okay with him going. It was fine.
I was like, hey, you're going to turn into ice? Yeah, somebody can just run you over, dude. Sorry. You can just shatter.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, I loved that Icicle's wife was totally about it. She's like on her deathbed and she's like, you go rule that world now.
Yeah. Delirious.
I just dug it.
On copious amounts of morphine. Yeah, it sounds like a great idea.
I mean, you know, she was just like, no, man, don't let this detract you from our plan. Our plan was to, you know, take out that 25% and make this world a paradise. Like,
yeah. As he mentions later, you don't know my wife.
Yeah, I loved that, too.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I mean, like, of all of that scene, what I loved the most was just how happy that dog looked when he pulled up in the truck. He just mowed somebody in the street down. The dog.
Yeah.
What's up, guys? Hey, that's my family over there.
Yeah. I did not mind things getting wrapped up. But I didn't feel like
I didn't mind it. I just don't know if I've ever seen it so thoroughly wrapped up.
But I don't believe that. Not even wrapped up. But you know, you said you hadn't seen anyone or good guys win so thoroughly at the end of a season.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like they did.
Well, what's left on the table?
Well, first of all, I feel like they lost Henry. They lost Brainwave Jr. He was murdered by his own father. That's a tremendous loss.
It is, kind of.
That is a tremendous loss for the good guys.
It is, but it's also like in terms of screen time. I mean, he was there. He was a loss, and he's gone. But it's not. I mean, the only one who had a truly like any kind of real connection was Yolanda, and they had a storied history, to put it very mildly. By the way, fuck her family. Also, just a absolutely quick side note.
But you know, to be fair, Courtney had developed something of a relationship with him when she thought that
they had a rapport, cousins. For sure. Yeah. Well, there was that. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But more importantly,
they had a hug. That was great. That's
well,
true.
They had a hug. But more importantly, the audience, we had a relationship with him because he loved his dad no matter what, even after he found out his dad was a piece of shit. Then sure. He's like, I'm going
to
try to
this out, trying to point out that there is good in people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, he we had a saw good arc, him, but also when yes. It came to the end of his arc, I was like, okay, well, they, you know, he died good, so they say. Like, that this it had purpose, it had meaning, and his death was, like I said, meaningful.
I but it gave the show it gave the show stakes. He was a good guy at the end. He was actively trying to help them, and you know, Yolanda certainly had a relationship with him and felt the need to get revenge for his death.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was solid, and I thought it was you know, a very good example of how you know, this is a dangerous game. You can't just go in as superheroes and always win the day. Like, they
yeah,
watched.
This isn't like Super Best Friends. I mean, people aren't going to come home.
Yeah.
I get that. And it was really useful for that, but also it didn't leave anything unraveled for me by the end of the season. I felt like it was perfectly used, and I was, you know, I was good with that story where it left it. Especially at the end when the big reveal of Brainwave is, you know, he says, your friends instead of our friends.
Mm-hmm.
Really drove the point home there.
Yeah.
And man, she just cut a motherfucker.
I know. And that's just, another thing. That's going to be an issue for Yolanda moving forward. Don't dismiss that. Like, she murdered
10 minutes
somebody.
Before, she literally says that, you know, God's the one who decides that murder's bad.
Yeah. Until she ripped out somebody's jugular.
I mean, just, oof. It's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah.
brutal.
So
I mean,
enough
where I was like, there's got to be another trick coming, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, she just killed him that fast? Jesus.
So that is not a win for her. That is going to have consequences.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Beth lost Chuck.
I feel like they insisted that they're going to fix that, and I believe them. So that is definitely something to deal with, but I'm not particularly worried about Chuck. Although I get why she was torn up about it. Like, Chuck's last words are like, please, Beth, help me.
And then he had that harrowing scream.
Yeah, like he and this is right after they declared each other best pals. Which is a bit silly until one of them dies 10 minutes later.
They did a really good job with that.
They did.
You know, and not that it can't be, you know, reconstructed, but Stripe took a major hit, you know, took a good beating.
Yeah. Yeah,
legs ripped off and shit. We saw it a few minutes later as he was flying around with Courtney at the 6 months later.
Yeah, he clearly found some parts for that. By the way, that was one of the most nerve-wracking parts of the show, maybe, for me, was watching. I mean, just imagining being inside that shell as it gets ripped apart, and Grundy's what you're going to face when he finally gets to the middle of that Tootsie Roll, man, or Tootsie Pop, uh-huh. Or whatever. Like,
and they did such a good job, because you're just like, oh, they saved Grundy for last. Grundy's a badass. He's ripping Stripe apart, and oh my gosh, he's about to kill Pat.
And I wondered if they really would for a second.
And then, you know, that you have, what was it, Rick, you know?
Rick,
Our man just started beating the shit out of him. And then you feel bad for Grundy, because he's like, no.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I forgot Grundy.
It was a good one.
Like, so, like, he went from like total like Hulk mode to the Grundy that Batman gives a turkey dinner to in Long Halloween.
Yes. Leaves in one of his haunts. Like, I was back and forth on Rick. I don't know. He was so angry the whole time that, like, it seemed very one note a little bit at times, where I was like, okay, I get it. You're angry, buddy. I understand. And I understand why. But they didn't spend too much time really really exploring his character very much, which, again, that's plenty to do for season two. That's fine.
Yeah.
Because I say that, but I wouldn't have had it any other way. Because one of the things that I really appreciated about the show is like what you said up front. It had focus. It didn't try to do everything all at once. It, right. it had a plan. It had a story. It brought its people on. We can deal with their backstory later. That's fine.
And, you know, Rick is just an angry teenager whose parents died and he's been stuck living with his asshole uncle. I mean, it's pretty clear. I don't need a whole, like, in-depth analysis. That was
No. I mean, I get
those
the
5 minutes the of the show were plenty.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts are not a mystery to me. But, like, what he could do, like, what other, not powers or anything. I mean, just, like, what other aspects of his personality remain unexplored? There's plenty more, I'm sure. Like, he finally won me over there at the end, though. I mean, like, I don't know. I finally felt like I saw some depth out of him that I hadn't seen yet in the season. When he finally does. He beats him into submission. Like, even Grundy's, like, I can't go any further.
Yeah.
And he's just, fight back, you know, the whole thing. I really enjoyed that scene.
Yeah.
I was rooting for him more then than I had the rest of the season.
That was solid. You know who I'm not looking forward to?
Oh, by the way, one quick thing. The only thing that I regretted about that is that I kind of have always wanted to see what would actually happen if you literally did pulverize Grundy's head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I guess we'll never know now. All right, what you got?
I am not looking forward to more of Tubaturd.
Oh, yeah.
He was a weird, weird character, and I would be perfectly happy if we just never saw him again.
Yeah, I would be okay with that.
Like, he wasn't even, like, he was painful.
It's always weird for me, like, it's hard to explain, because in this situation, he's being bullied, and I'm going to root for him.
Sure.
But there's a part of me that's like, you sniveling little, come on, man. Like... I don't even know how to describe that or make that right for me personally. I don't know how to explain it. But yeah, there's some part of me that just did not like him to begin with.
Yeah.
Phrase Tubaturd annoyed the shit out of me.
Why come would on, it annoy
you can't, you can't write something better as an insult than that. Fuck that.
And now I enjoy him more knowing that he annoyed you that much.
He did. He did. But it had a lot to do with that. It just had a lot to do with that very, very stupidly sophomoric insult.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's
and
not
you know,
like...
You can tell me like, oh, well, they're in high school. You know what? Fuck that. High schoolers are more creative. I was there, and they were more creative about the insults than that. Those
sometimes.
Fuckers can get right to your soul.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes they have lazy writers, too.
Yeah. I knew plenty of people who were... Yeah, never mind.
Well, sure. There was always that.
Oh, and
I know this is a very simple thing, but it did annoy me. Like, his uniform was ripped when he was talking to his mother, and then the next day when he's beating the guy with the tuba, his uniform was fine.
Well, I'm sure his mother put the fear of God into some people to fix that.
Maybe, but in my experience in high school, you had one of those things. It smelled terrible, and you had to wash it over and over again. That's what I remember from high school.
I mean, sure, but this is a town run by supervillains. She's one of them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure she had the cleaners on notice.
Get that shit fixed. Yeah. Or it's your ass.
I will play at you really fast. Trust me, it's more threatening than it sounds.
They even did a good job of making me care about the Cosmic Staff as a character.
Yeah, had a lot of personality.
It did. This is just all around a really good season. And
that
I
was, if did you, all right, so you didn't like Mike altogether that much, but did you feel for him like when he grabs the staff and it does nothing? Like, my heart broke a little bit for him.
It didn't for me. I was just like, yes, right.
You're not special, jackass. Deal with it.
Like, stop being a 25-year-old, 8-year-old. You
well,
weird
you know,
child.
I get that, but also, I mean, realistically, like, you grow up fast in broken homes, so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, I can deal with that.
Yeah, he's just a bit of a creep.
But, like, it did remind me, like, is there not, like... Most people remember a time where they're like, man, I just wish I was special like that. Like, most kids go through a little phase where they're like, if I just had, like, any kind of superpower, I don't care. This being
me. Most kids, I say that every day.
Yes, that's true. But it felt particularly poignant to know, because he's sitting there, he's sitting there kind of having to try to justify it to himself, like, well, maybe it could have been me if blah, blah, blah. And it was like, this is pathetic in a way that, like, I identify with way too much. This hurts me personally.
Yeah, no, I was good. I was like, yeah, that's right.
Felt personally attacked.
The cosmic staff doesn't like you.
I was a little bit like, oh, come on, staff. You could have, like, blinked at him or something. Just give the kid some hope. Nothing. Oh.
Yeah.
Did you pop his balloon next, you fucking rod?
Yeah. But yeah, no, they did a great job this season. I really liked watching the Justice Society eat their own. I really liked seeing, Courtney and
Pat.
Eat
their own is a good way to phrase it, yeah.
Yeah. I like to see Courtney and Pat, like, I really enjoyed her, like, just being so insistent that Starman was her dad. I knew that there was no way they were going to let that ride for the whole season.
Yeah.
But I was also, and I really hope they don't kind of go back on that now, because I really like the idea that, like, no, it's not about lineage. It's about, you know, character. It's about who you are.
Yeah. I mean, they could go back. I mean, there's no reason. Could. I don't remember them saying anything so definitive that they couldn't just say later that that guy thought he was the dad and was shitty at being a dad, even though he wasn't actually the dad.
Yeah.
Like, even if that guy thought he was the dad and acted that way, yeah, he still needs punched. Or, alternative, he could just, maybe he knows he's not, and he's still shitty at that. I mean, Either way, the guy's getting punched.
Yeah.
But you could work it in. Speaking of, though, since we brought up Joel McHale's triumphant return, it's something, because I love that guy so much, it's something I tried not to be actively disappointed at, that they didn't have more of him in the season. It's just not fair to hold the lack of Jeff Winger, hold that show accountable for it.
Right.
But, now that he's back, what do you think? Like, is it really him? Because, you know, that was a while back, and he still looks pretty good.
Yeah, he do.
Like, what are we dealing with here?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, they could do, there were things in the comics they tried to, you know, manipulate where they said, like, oh, well, this is the reason they were exposed to blah, 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 and now the JSA not having aged very much in several decades was a thing in the comics. Well, that was a thing in the comics, though, for a while.
Well, sure. But they aged him in the show. I mean, sure, they could have been more substantial about it, but I don't think that was where they were going to spend all their money.
But, you know, they didn't really age Pat that much either.
No, not really. But it's kind of like that. It didn't strike me as that weird. Like, there's a period between, you know, if you're kind of remaining relatively healthy, which clearly a lot of them did, there's a period in your 30s and 40s where you just look the same for 20 years.
Right. Of course, they could always, like, Courtney could always be like, you know, you haven't really aged that much. And he's just like, yeah, well, we know this guy named Niles Calder.
Makes great flapjacks.
It made me say wow.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of in-universe explanations that are possible, but it, you know, for purposes of this show, they are clearly a little bit younger in the early, like, the first episode.
Yeah. So yeah, man, the big reveal of Eclipso at the end.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one for a sec.
Yeah.
On what is already a pretty deadly little girl.
The pre-Spectre Wrath of God.
Yeah.
Angel of Vengeance. Trapped in the heart of darkness.
Literally filed away in a dusty room. I don't know what to do with that exactly. Where did she get that from? I didn't catch it. Did you?
I mean, it was just like a... I thought it was in the JSA building.
ISA building. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I guess ISA, so, but it looked like an old records room. Like, it looked like they'd have, I mean, old photographs next to it or some shit.
Yeah, I mean, was it just like, you know, some sort of filing room, some sort of, like, trophy room?
Like, she skimmed past, you know, receipts from Home Depot where they did a renovation on the lair at some point. I was like, oh, yeah, Eclipso, right there.
We need to hide this, yeah, this black diamond. Yeah. Make sure this crazy bastard from Gemworld doesn't get out.
Yeah. It's kind of like Well, it's good logic. Like, where would you hide the most important thing? Well, do you put it in a pedestal in the middle and attract all the magpies and catwomen? No, 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 no. Let's hide it in the most mundane place we can think of.
Catwomen.
But whatever. You don't want to, like, you can attract attention.
That's pretty standard.
Oh.
That is pretty standard. I can't just let you go Catwomans. What the hell, man?
I meant singular Catwoman.
I let a lot of shit slide on the show.
Catwomans? One day I'll understand why my brain polarized it that way instead of the other, but whatever. Probably an autopsy. Probably at the time of autopsy, we'll understand that.
Look, I know that
or diagnosis. There's a possibility.
I know that I'm stretching, but there was a bit where Eclipso was like sent back to Gym World by John Constantine. I would just love to see Matt Ryan.
Oh yeah.
I know this is Earth 2. I know this is Earth 2, so it might be a completely different Constantine, or it would be a completely different I don't care. I just want to see him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I get that, but
I still want my
somebody like Constantine would be a lot of fun on this show.
I still want to see my Constantine Kipling team up.
Sure. I don't blame you. But yeah, hiding it somewhere mundane like that makes sense to me, was my point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why would you ever look there? I don't understand.
Maybe that's the point.
I've seen a joke somewhere. It's like an old Tumblr joke now, where somebody's like, you know what would be a really good place to hide like nuclear codes is in the story part of the recipe section of on a website.
Uh-huh.
Which is actually kind of true. And then I think the response somewhere is like, hey, so that's actually the plot of a Metal Gear game. Oh, okay. Apparently that is a plot point somewhere.
Huh.
But it makes sense. I've never read one of those in my life.
Yeah, me either.
I was happy at some point those websites installed the jump to recipe button.
Yeah. I'm like, can you just show me how much damn butter I have to buy?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then still you do jump to recipe and it scrolls immediately to the top part of that. And the top part is like, list of possible substitute ingredients for every possible food allergen that could possibly come up with their recipe. Just give me the normal one. I will adjust afterward. I just want to make a fucking waffle.
All right, here's the normal one. Nope, can't have that. Nope, can't have that. Nope, can't have that. Nope, can't have that.
No one,
diabetes.
No one in my house has a gluten problem. Just show me how to make a waffle.
I want to make a waffle, but with no carbs.
What you do is you say the word waffle and go, that's all you got. If you're feeling sporty, you say maple syrup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, they did a really great job, though. Everybody did a really good job acting. They did a great job of showing me why I should care about every character on the show.
Yeah, everybody got their play.
I even liked Mike. Felt bad for him a little bit by the end. Not because he couldn't be a star boy or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I mean, they wouldn't have had to modify the costume as much. Actually, that's not true. Good you Lord. Know, imagine how much that would have. Actually, it would have been more. Because what's Mike worth? Like 4'3", maybe?
Maybe.
Joel McHale's like 8'5". I mean, you'd have to, he's a giant man.
Let me tell you the moment that I turned on Mike and I was like, you know what?
Turned for the worst or the best?
For the best.
Okay.
He started out bad.
Okay.
The minute he put that drill into freaking Sportsmaster,
right?
I was like, shit, all right, you're a little badass. And it went from him being at his worst to him being at his best, like in a matter of minutes, because I was just like, will you just go look at his freaking robot and quit playing with that drill, you piece of shit, you petulant ass. And then like it just switched, like, oh, you're a badass. Yeah, you took down freaking Sportsmaster with a freaking drill in his back. Like,
yeah.
Peg that kidney.
Yeah. You know what's sad though? Because of my recent life experiences, things will occur to me. So I'm watching that scene the whole time. I'm watching. I'm like, they just peeled the Black and Decker sign off that. That's just a Black and Decker drill. Like I own that drill.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
I know exactly what that is.
Uh huh.
I don't think anybody else makes that color drill.
Not that I know of. No, I knew the drill.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, what you got? You got anything else? Because I'm pretty done. If you haven't seen the show, I don't know why you listened to all this.
I need to look it up. I'm kind of curious. Let me see. What was that song I was kind of bitching about?
Oh, yeah, because you said it was like the worst, like the most cheesiest minute or the cheesiest 5 minutes you've seen or something like
it,
that
it at was,
the end of it.
I mean, let's see. End Stargirl's song. I'm doing it on my phone. You might be able to type it faster.
I mean, they played Hanson in the end credits.
Oh, that was egregious. Why?
That wasn't. Because that song helped Geoff Johns get through his sister's death.
Oh, fuck. You had to give it a decent reason. God damn it.
That's what he said. That's why it played in the first episode as well.
I had that song in my head the rest of the night. I was not happy about it. Oh, Tune Find. Hey, that sounds promising. How does that I'm not trying to look, the man grieved, and I'm not trying to judge it. I have to wonder, like, how does that help? I don't get it. Oh, there's Imbop. Oh, Better Than Ezra. Yeah, it was. I was thinking it was an old song. Woo.
Mm.
So, not a fan of myself.
Geoff Johns for Imbop says, that song meant something to me when my sister passed away because it was such a bright, cheery song about how people are in your life and then they disappear. As quick as lightning, they're gone. I always was struck by that song because it's such a fun pop song and yet has a very emotional meaning to it. If you listen to the lyrics, that's why I chose that. People won't really know, but that's why. That's what he said.
I mean, he may have looked into the meaning of that song more than any other human on the planet, including the Hansons.
I don't know, man.
I have a memory of that song myself, and for me personally, it was the first song that I ever gritted my teeth and pretended I liked to impress a girl.
Well, that's just sad. Grow some balls, man.
Well, you know, it was early days. I was just trying to make it work. I guess it was Better Than Ezra. I don't really know the song. I don't know this song.
Song says, literally, you have so many relationships in this life. Only one or two will last. You go through all the pain and strife. Then you turn your back and they're gone so fast. And they're gone so fast. So yeah. hold on to the ones who really care. In the end, they'll be the only ones there. And when you get old and start losing your hair, can you tell me who will still care?
Whew. Okay. Well, it's not actually terrible.
And at the end, it says, plant a seed, plant a flower, plant a rose. You can plant any one of those. Keep planting to find out which one grows.
Hmm.
I mean, that's like his whole career.
Is it terrible that I don't think those are terrible lyrics?
I mean, you know, it's all subjective, man.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy it if you want. I mean, it's fine. I think it's a little simplistic,
but it's
also...
Like, imagine writing something that had some poignancy like that, and then deciding, what are we going to do for the chorus? I don't know.
Mbop. Ba-doo-ba-dop-dop-doo-wop. Whatever it is. I don't know.
Ba-doo-ba-dop-ba-boo.
Oh, God. There's this one section where it says, in a mbop, they're gone. In an mbop, they're not there. In a mbop, they're gone.
Oh, God.
Until you lose your hair. Like, oh, my God. That's depressing.
Oh. So they were trying to make mbop a measure of a time, like a unit of time measurement, I guess. Like the way Quibi tried to make 10 minutes a Quibi.
I don't know. I've now gone from feeling
like they wanted
this...
people to be in an interrogation and be like, and what happened next? Well, officer, I turned my head to the left and mbop, he was gone.
Yeah. You know, I think.
You say it was just one mbop, just one unit of mbop. Yes, sir.
Yeah. You know what? I think now they may have been geniuses. They like couched this really meaningful song into like a freaking, you know, stupid pop song.
Yeah.
That's like super catchy and everyone's just like walking around singing it thinking it's just like the most cheerful bullshit thing ever. And like, no, they're singing about how you're going to lose everyone you love.
I mean, it's like they knew the fate of their music career before they ever really got started.
Like, no, let's just do like
They could have released that say, and they could have released that that whole thing, and then later had a radio DJ at the time ask him, "So, what do you guys see next?" And, well, I think we got an Mbop or two. I don't see us lasting very long. I don't think the second album's going to go very long at all. If we release it, even.
Yeah, I mean, they had a few hits, but you know, I don't know. That's...
I mean,
oh God.
Devoted too much time to Hanson.
I'm glad it helped him. It was a hard time for him. It was genuinely a tragic event. I just don't understand.
You would think he would be a little more sympathetic to people who have also lost someone recently. But you know, whatever.
that aside. Okay, so before that was I guess it was Better Than Ezra, which was I didn't know who it was. I don't know them very much. I just know that in the times that I've run across Better Than Ezra, we didn't get along very well.
Okay.
But I also do remember that was like high school for us. That was back in the day. So I guess it was probably some other meaningful song.
I don't know. I don't listen to Better Than Ezra.
I don't either. Now, I'll tell you this though, with no context, my surmise, because I was watching the last couple minutes of this show, and there's a moment where like she's flying around, you know, they have the little Christmas thing. It's all very touching. It was a good wrap up. And then the staff wants to, you know, go stretch its legs. Great. Okay. Cool. Looks very cold for that uniform, but whatever.
The energy from the cosmic staff is keeping her warm.
I had to presume because it looked quite frigid. But they start playing the song that sounded to me like a song from when I was in high school, a song that I wouldn't have liked even in high school. Like, it sounded like some Three Doors Down kind of shit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I
think that's why it reminded me of Smallville in a lot of ways.
Maybe.
Liked it. I liked it all because it was like, this feels like Smallville again.
Yeah, it's got that nostalgic feel to it. Yeah, I could see that. But it's I didn't like make that connection.
Sitting up high, looking out on like a small town, some shitty 90s shit is playing. I mean.
Sitting somewhere completely unafraid of heights. Yeah. Shitty 90s song in the background. Yeah, check. Yeah, like I was watching it though, and I just had a moment about 60 seconds into that finale, to her flying around, and I was just like, man, this feels like it's going on for a minute. And then it just kept going. And then Luke Wilson, Stripe comes, yeah, Pat comes to join. And then that scene kind of goes on for a little, like it felt stretched out. And the reason I say that is because it felt like they stretched the scene out enough to have played the whole song. Or substantially have played the song.
Mm-hmm.
Enough that I kind of thought, you know what, I know what this show means to Jeff Johns. So I was kind of wondering if there was like a connection to that song that he, for some reason, wanted to make me listen to that whole song as a result of. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do know it just felt like that. That was like the one scene where I was like, okay, well, I think I can wrap up here. And, you know, kept watching, obviously, just to see what happened, and then was delighted by the stingers. But.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that I don't know. That scene felt awkward and stretched to me. It was like, which was weird because it was just like a victory lap, but it just went on for forever.
Yeah, it was a victory lap. It was definitely a victory lap. And the basic idea is like there's a lot of pain in the world, and as the bridge says, we'll keep on rising, never gonna stop, keep on shining on.
Is this the Better Than Ezra?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gonna be grateful every day, make a little way, then we'll ride it. Gonna go shaking off the shame, make a little way, and we'll shine it on. Yeah, I'm not gonna read the whole thing, but that's basically it.
Yeah, but there's not like a Cage the Elephant song or something that could have done the same thing. Or...
Hey, man, look, the guy grew up in the 90s.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
I get it. I did too, but I've stopped listening to a lot of it.
Well, I mean, I have my picks.
Not all of it, clearly.
You know, I keep up with Foo Fighters and still enjoy that One Third Eye Blind album.
Yeah, the first one was pretty solid.
That first one was pretty good.
A couple songs of
the second one wasn't that. Well, yeah.
A couple songs of the second one. I mean, I do too. I devoured that Tool album when it came out last year. Devoured it. Every note, front to back, over and over again. Like I did every other Tool album. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know. I may not put that at the end of my show.
Yeah. I mean, I've always said you were a complete Tool.
This is true. I am also, like, I have often been accused of being a musical elitist, and it is absolutely accurate. I've come to terms with it.
Yeah.
I get very snotty about shit like that.
You do.
Yeah. Hard.
It's weird.
Yeah. I know. I've learned to accept that. It is a flaw in my character over which I am virtually powerless.
Yeah. You know, the thing I hate is, you know, when you're like, I don't know. I know a lot of people who play music and who know too much about music. So I can't really have a conversation with them. But like, I'll be like, I don't like that song. It sounds like shit. I just don't like it. And they're like, no, actually, it's really technically good. It's like, they explain all the intricacies and how it's way better than I'm giving it credit for. I'm like, fine. I just don't like it. Leave me alone.
Well, look, the counter melody thing, and they've got the plagal cadence at the end of the chorus, which actually they use later.
Yeah, you are one of those people.
Yeah.
Except you usually play into the elitist bullshit, and you're just like, yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah. No, I appreciate being subversive a lot when it comes to that kind of thing. Like, another little Beatles moment when they were, when they were recording early on and everyone said, like, oh, just some pop bullshit or R&B back in the day when it was still called that because it hadn't kind of become its own thing in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bullshit rock and roll, whatever. They got called whatever. And then as their music and as their songwriting abilities got more and more complex, suddenly they had music critics writing about all these tricks they were using. They're like, I don't have no fucking idea what you're talking about. It sounded good. Fuck off. Like, it somewhat resented the critics later coming around to them. Like, you know what? You weren't there for us when we started. You can fuck off now.
Yeah. I used to have a boss who was just like, the Beatles were just nothing but a 60s boy band. Just like, you know what? We're not talking anymore. We cannot talk about music. You're not going to talk about music with me anymore? No.
Nope. You've disqualified yourself.
Nope.
Oh.
I'm glad you like Batman. I'm glad you like some movies that I like. But you know what? Yeah, no. We're not talking about music.
It's like, how deep does the ignorance go? Like, what do you think about the Stones? Oh, they were a pretty good country band back in the day. Like, for real? Okay. I mean, yeah, they did some kind of Western stuff. Okay, well, you know, yeah. I don't need to get into that any further. Okay.
All right. Well, I think
the same guy that was like, as soon as Bob Dylan picked up the electric guitar, oh, shut your face. Shut your face.
You know, like Dylan, you know, ever since he sold out. What? Oh, you mean when he lost an audience because he decided I'm doing something different creatively?
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean when that happened? Oh.
He got bored of using an acoustic as his primary instrument for, at that point, 5 or 6 records? Yeah. Anyway.
It's one of my favorite bits is when, you know, they're like, he started integrating more and more love songs into his albums before he even did the electric stuff. And someone asked him why he doesn't want to do protest songs anymore. And Dylan just goes, all of my songs are protest songs.
Yeah. Especially the sellout vibe is just, what are we doing here?
Like, yeah, go listen to those love songs. They're really protest songs. Anyway, we need to wrap this up.
Sounds good.
I
can sum up that with a Tool lyric, actually. I sold out long before you'd ever known my name. I sold my soul to make a record, dipshit, and then you bought one.
All right.
And that'll do.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this installment of DC on Screen. You can find every episode at dconscreen.com. I say that, but some of the links don't work in the older episodes. I'm sorry, I'm working on that.
Technical error recently brought to Dave's attention, and he's on it.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying. Yeah.
I can tell very quickly the one thing I know I'm not looking forward to next season, just as a final.
What's that?
The ads on CW.
Yeah, they're saying that, like, it's not going to change the show at all being on CW, but, you know, we'll see.
I mean, if the content remains the same, that's great.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily have any reason to think that it couldn't stay the same. I don't think it's by any stretch doomed. I just know that I'm going to have to watch those commercials because that's how they roll. And I have not seen any hint of change from anybody at CW that they're going to change that anytime soon. So
right.
That's what we're in for, guys.
That's what we're doing. But I like the show, so I'll do it.
Well, I'll do the same thing I always do. Mute it during the commercials and, you know.
Yep. I do want to remind everybody that I do the Star Trek Universe podcast. They're currently airing Star Trek Lower Decks weekly. We've still got something like 21 consecutive weeks of Star Trek, of new Star Trek, with Lower Decks, and then they're picking up Star Trek Discovery right after that, and then they'll start playing that weekly. So Star Trek UCast, Star Trek Universe podcast that I do with Matt Carroll of the MCU cast, and Bethany and I, my wife Bethany and I, are still doing the Breaking Bond podcast. So if you're a James Bond fan, we are watching all of those movies and doing review segments. And I think tonight we are recording The Spy Who Loved Me from 1977. So that should be up by the time you're listening to this, whoever you are out there.
Mm-hmm. And, later re-edited it into The Spy Who Shagged Me.
No.
they did that all in post.
Anyway.
Only took $20 to $30 million worth of reshoots to get that booted.
Mm-hmm. Until next time, y'all. Keep some DC on your screen. Our intro music is by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band, Galactic Engineers of Magnetic Sounds, or GEMS, can be found on SoundCloud and Bandcamp. Visit DCOnScreen.com to find our Patreon, merch, contact information, and every episode of the show for free, including crossovers we've done with other podcasts. DC OnScreen is a maladjusted production. For more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy, vlogs, parodies, and our improvised web series Hey Guy, visit maladjusted.dv.